This is the Comics Alternative, episode 212, a look at the November previews catalog. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Comics Alternative. I'm Derek.
And I'm Andy, and we're two guys with PhDs talking about comics.
And it's the first week of November, which means that it's time to look at the current previews catalog. But before we get into that discussion, we want to let all of you know that this episode of the Comics Alternative is brought to you by the great folks at Discount Comic Book Service. Go to their website, dcbservice.com, for all of your comics pre-ordering needs. There, you're going to find all DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse titles at 40% off the cover price if you pre-order. For all of the other publishers, you'll find that those discounts are 20 to 35% off the cover price. And every single month, you're going to find some unbelievable specials. Sometimes those specials could be as much as 45% off of the cover price. Sometimes as much as 50% off cover. But you know, you can find discounts that are even more impressive than that.
That's right. And since this is our monthly previews episode, you can guess that a bunch of the stuff we talk about today is going to be deeply discounted as the specials on dcbservice.com.
That's right. They have great specials. You got to go to the website to see what they are for November. That's dcbservice.com. Go there for all of your comics pre-ordering needs. And after you do get your comics there, please be sure to send them an email and tell them that the two guys with PhDs sent you.
That's right.
Andy, before we jump into the November previews catalog, we have some news to share.
Okay.
And one person who not only listens to the podcast, but also has been helpful in the past, is Gallo Ramiro Gutierrez. And he runs the Comic Book Geeks page on Facebook. And he has allowed me on a regular basis to help advertise our weekly shows, our monthly shows, basically everything we put out of the Comics Alternative. And he has a Kickstarter campaign underway right now. And I just wanted to share this information with our listeners. This is called Billy, a Western graphic novel. And this is what Gallo has created as part of his Project Nerd Publishing Initiative. So if you go to Kickstarter right now and search for Billy, B-I-L-L-I-E, Western graphic novel, you're sure to find it. And as we record this, which is on the 30th of October, there's only 12 days to go. So definitely check this out. It does look like an interesting graphic novel, and they have a really nice video on that as well.
Yeah, check that out and support good comics on Kickstarter.
Andy, are you ready to jump into the previews catalog?
Yeah, I think so.
So we begin as we normally do in Dark Horse. Where do you start there?
I start pretty deep into Dark Horse on page 59. So if you have anything earlier, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess one or two things before that. On page 51, I wanted to point out the first trade of a title that we discussed a few months back, and that is Black Hammer. So the first trade of Black Hammer, which I guess is called Secret Origins, is being solicited. And again, this is on page 51. And then if you turn the page on to 52 and 53, you'll see that there's more Black Hammer goodness. this one is Black Hammer Giant-Sized Annual. And on this one, not only do you have Jeff Lemire doing the work on this, but you also have artists Dustin Nguyen, Emmy Lennox, Nate Powell, Matt Kent, and Ray Fox contributing work. So this looks pretty cool. It's 44 pages.
Yeah, it looks like Jeff Lemire is pulling together a bunch of the people he collaborates with regularly.
Right. So I'm definitely going to get that one. And then a few pages later on 55, there is another first trade of a title that we previously discussed. Greg Pak and Mirko Kolak's Kingsway West. So this is the first trade of that series.
It looks like that might be it for that series, unless they do more. It's not listed as volume one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. That's a good series, though.
Yeah, we'll see if there's more to it. But, you know, whether this is the end or there may be more in the future, get the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So now we go to page 59.
Yeah, and so 2017, which is, I guess, coming up soon, is going to be, among other things, the centennial anniversary of Will Eisner's birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dark Horse is putting out Will Eisner, the Centennial Celebration, as a large hardcover and limited edition hardcover. And this is basically the book to go along, the companion book to the Will Eisner exhibition that's going to be at Les Musées de la Bande Dessinée in France. And is that in Angoulême? Sure. There's some of the contributors include Eisner himself, Dennis Kitchen, Paul Gravatt, and John Lind. Mm-hmm. If you really want to splurge, so the regular book is $50. If you really want to splurge, you can drop $100 for the limited edition, limited to 100 copies, that's going to contain a signature from Will Eisner. So I don't know where they found 100 separate signatures from Will Eisner.
Yeah, I was wondering that myself.
Flying around. Are they going to be canceled checks?
Oh, God, who knows? But I mean, but the thing is, if these limited editions, limited to 100 and twice as much as just the non-limited edition,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to be an actual signature. So how are they going to get that in there?
Well, maybe he signed book plates for something that never got published or yeah. never came out. You know, there's a lot of ways it could be. This exhibition, I should add, is also at the Society of Illustrators, which I think is in New York. Mm. So 2017, we've got the 100th. You know, Will Eisner's 100th birthday. I think we're gonna have Jack Kirby's 100th birthday. So I think we're gonna see a lot of celebrations in 2017 of some of the great comic creators who've been around, who will have their centennial anniversaries.
Right, and also we should mention that this book will be in dual languages, English and French.
Uh huh. Okay.
So for our French listeners out there, you get something as well. You don't have to rely on our rough English language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I'm wondering about this book, the size, it says 10 by 14. So this is going to be a large book. I'm wondering if it's going to match the dimensions of that Paul Levitt's Champion of the Graphic Novel book. That would be kind of nice, even though that was published by Abrams, if they would they could go together on a shelf.
I don't know. I'm looking over to my side, and I do see that Levitt's book, but I think it's wider than what this will be.
Okay.
Yeah. So definitely something to look forward to.
Yep.
But there's more to look forward to if we turn the page.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the first things on the next page is Reefer Madness Comics, edited and designed by our friend Craig Yeo, mm-hmm. though not a part of Yeo Books, I guess, with IDW.
Yeah, and in fact, when I saw this the other day, I emailed him to ask what the deal was on this. I said, this is not a Yeo book, but how does this fit in with what you're doing? Why wouldn't this have been something that you would do with YoBooks and IDW? I haven't heard back from him yet, but I was just curious.
Yeah, but it's, you know, if you like Clip Craig Yo stuff, this is exactly the kind of thing he does, where he takes a theme, and in this case, you know, marijuana use, and puts together an anthology of stories from the Golden Age that feature this, including, it looks like, some DC stuff by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, Frank Frazetta, Jerry Robinson, Jack Kirby, and others. So this looks like a fun book.
Yeah. Yeah. And the solicit also is typical Yo. Degradation, crime, madness, hysteria surrounded marijuana as a perceived gateway drug from the 30s to the 1950s and beyond. From comically misinformed to soberly concerned, these comics lament the impact of weed on youth culture.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Do you have anything else on that page?
Not on that page, but on the next page, 61, there is a trade paperback of Kristen Gertznick's Hench Girl. Now, have you read Hench Girl, any Hench Girl?
No, but you covered it on a webcomics episode, right?
Yeah, we did, and I really liked that webcomic, and then about a year and a half ago, I think it was, individual issues of Hench Girl was coming out from Scout Comics, a really, really small press. So one of the things I'm curious about is, why is the trade coming out from Dark Horse and not Scout? I mean, I can guess, but I just find it curious. It'll get more of an audience being published through Dark Horse, but maybe Scout just doesn't have, I haven't checked to see if they do trades or not. Maybe they just do single issues.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. That's what I kind of assumed, though.
Yeah. And I think that's all that I have in Dark Horse. Do you have anything else?
Well, I just wanted to take a stop at page 68 because this is actually something we sort of speculated on when we talked about the Joe Kubert Tarzan book.
Oh, okay.
Edgar Rice Burroughs' Pellucidar at the Earth's Core, that, you know, when DC took on the Tarzan books from Gold Key back in the 70s, they also took on some other Burroughs properties, including Korak, Son of Tarzan, and one of the backup stories in Korak and later in Edgar Rice Burroughs' Weird Worlds was an adaptation of At the Earth's Core. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons also I mention this is because it's got some beautiful early art by Mike Kaluta, and I really like Mike Kaluta's stuff. I have all the comics that are in this, so I'm not sure if I'm going to get it, but it is definitely going to be a good-looking book and a book for anybody who was a fan of some of the great 70s artists that were working in kind of fantasy stuff. In addition to Mike Kaluta, Dan Green and Alan Weiss also are included.
Yeah, the cover looks really good, and this is a trade paperback just as the Kubert Tarzan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So does that wrap up our little romp through Dark Horse?
Yes.
Okay. And then we get to DC / Vertigo, and curiously enough, this month I have nothing I wanted to highlight in DC Vertigo.
Well, there's two things I want to mention then. In DC on page 76, I just want to say that I'm really interested in this Commandy Challenge book that DC is putting out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a 12-issue miniseries. Each issue is going to have a different creative team, and I think they're going to each kind of leave each issue as a cliffhanger for the next team to try to pick up and build on. I don't know if you remember the DC Challenge back in the 80s. Do you remember that book?
I wasn't reading comics then.
It was a 12-issue miniseries that had like the top creative teams in DC doing it, and they basically did that. Each issue, the creators would leave the main characters, whoever they happened to be, in some kind of impossible situation, and then the next writer and artist would have to figure out a way to get them out of it and then go to another thing, and they go to another cliffhanger and so on through the 12 issues. And it's a book that isn't entirely successful, but it is a fun book. You can actually, it's never been collected, I don't think, but you can find it really, really cheap all the time. In quarter dollar boxes, whatever. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this Commandy challenge, but it's got some good creators on it.
See, that's something that I missed by stopping my comics reading when I started college and then picking it up afterwards. So I missed that original.
Yeah, challenge. You can get that stuff super easy. Yeah, super cheap. And I don't know if I would highly recommend it. It was fun when it came out. I don't, maybe one of those things that my memory of it is more fonder than the actual quality of the book. And then there's one other thing I wanted to mention in Vertigo, and this is on page 140, so it takes a while to scroll up to that since I'm using the PDF. But this is, I think, the first time DC is collecting the Kid Eternity series, which came out of the Grant Morrison and was it Duncan Fedrago? Kid Eternity miniseries that was one of Morrison's earliest works for DC. And the Kid Eternity comic book series was one of the first Vertigo series then, when Vertigo started. And it was written by Ann Nesenti and drawn by Sean Phillips. And there's some great Sean Phillips art in it too. Mm-hmm. It's not a series that lasted very long, but this first volume is going to collect issues 1 through 9. And so I'm glad that Vertigo is starting to dig deeper into this catalog that it has for these early series that weren't, you know, they weren't creator owned. They were based on properties that DC owned, but they were part of that early Vertigo landscape. And so I'm looking for this too, because I got rid of my issues of that series a long time ago. So I might pick up these volumes once they come out.
Oh yeah. You can plug that gap. And also on page 144, the aforementioned Morrison Kid Eternity Deluxe Edition is resolicited.
Yep.
So there's that. So if you want your Kid Eternity fix, this is the month for you in previews.
Yeah, that's true. That version of Kid Eternity anyway. Yeah. So that's it for me in DC and Vertigo, and I go to IDW.
Yes. So where do you begin in IDW?
I'm pretty deep into it, 174. Do you have anything before that?
Yeah, that's where I go as well. The quote unquote new box office poison issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Still scrolling.
Yeah. No, this is something that we've seen before. In fact, this is becoming, a trend, it seems, that we have previously published stories, like, for instance, in graphic novel form, that are now being released in single issues, sometimes with a variation. And in this case, it is the color, just as we have recently with, Van Lente and Dunleavy's comic book History of Comics, which, you know, the next issue of which is solicited right next to Box Office Poison. But we have Alex Robinson doing something similar to what the comic book history is doing, and that is they're putting out Box Office Poison in single issues. This one is colored. So if you're a fan of Box Office Poison, I'm trying to remember when that book first came out. It's been quite a while.
Yeah, it has been quite a while. No, I don't remember myself either, but I'm feeling like it is before 2000, maybe even.
Yeah, it was the 90s, I believe. And yeah. So it's a great book. It's a look at the lives of four individuals, and I don't want to say that it reminds me of Seinfeld, because it's a very different kind of comedy, but it's somewhat similar in that we get to see the day-to-day lives of some of these characters and what they do, some of their foibles, and it's a very human story, I feel. And I'm surprised. I'm glad, but I'm surprised to see this coming back out. And in fact, I emailed Alex Robinson over the weekend to ask for a little more detail behind this, because I was curious if this was something that he initiated or if this is something that people at IDW and or Top Shelf approached to him or approached him about, because I'm wondering if this is becoming maybe a smaller trending comics publishing model, because we've seen a number of these books doing something like this. So
yeah, this is the first time I feel like we've seen one that's a kind of classic being brought back. You know, Comic Book History of Comics isn't that old for this to be done to, and some of the other stuff that this that are similar to this have been from more recent comics. So, you know, if they're going deep into the black and white boom of the 80s and 90s, there might be some good stuff coming out then in color that may not be kind of fresh for new readers. So if nobody's read Box Office Poison and they were turned off by it being in black and white, this, I guess, is the book. This is made for them.
Right. Now, we also have, and I think this started maybe earlier this year with IDW, and that is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Right.
But that was a recent publication. We reviewed the book on the podcast, and then they came out with individual issues. And it's interesting in that I think, if I can remember correctly, that with Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, they did the opposite. You know, the book was colorized, but the individual comic book issues, I think, aren't they in black and white?
Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, there's that. And then I think Boom is doing, and Archaea is doing something similar, in terms of taking something that had originally appeared, or at least has appeared at some point as a book, and then serializing it. There is Charles Soule's Strange Attractors, which was a serial, then was a book, now it's a serial. And then there is The Joiners in 3D that was a book. Now it is just The Joiners. There's no 3D element to it, but that was serialized. So I find this a curious trend.
Yeah, and I'll be curious, too, to see what else comes out in this form from that earlier era. So I go to the next page, page 175, to You Might Be an Artist If. Now I'm going to probably butcher the creator's name of this, Lauren. It's P-U-R-J-E. Mm-hmm. Purge, not sure.
Either one of those sound correct.
Okay.
Could be correct.
And this is a collection of Lauren's comic strips about, as it says, the ups and downs of life in the arts. And so, what it's like to get a BFA and try to break into the art world.
And this is also a Top Shelf title.
Yeah. And this is also one of the few autobiographical books I noticed in this month's previews. Normally we get like six or seven.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned this, because that is one I completely overlooked, which is weird because I spent a lot of time looking at the Box Office Poison solicit on the previous, on the facing page. And then on the next page, right next to You Might Be an Artist If, there's the big visuals for Comic Book History of Comics, issue number 3. So I was looking at that as well. And because of those two more visually, I guess, demanding of attention images, I completely overlooked a much more subtle image with You Might Be an Artist If, because it's a picture of, I guess, Lauren on a futon or a mattress on the floor, and then above her head is floating in thought bubbles, You Might Be an Artist If. So it's much calmer, more peaceful, more subdued than the images on either side of it.
Right.
Yeah. So worth checking out. Now I next go to page 179. What about you?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is the next book in the Euro comic series that IDW has. And this book is Flight of the Raven, written and illustrated by Jean-Pierre Gibrat, G-I-B-R-A-T. So I'm pretty sure I'm not pronouncing the French last name correctly. But it looks good. And from the solicit, it has my attention. It says it's a lushly colored graphic novel, one of the most stunningly beautiful comics of the 21st century. The story takes place in Paris during the German occupation and stars a memorable heroine in the French Resistance. In the French Resistance fighter, seems wrong. Okay, named Jean or Jean. With the help of an apolitical cat burglar named Francois, she tries to save her comrades, including her missing sister Cecile, from the Gestapo. They walk in the places between shadows as Gibrat uses the evocative Paris rooftops and river barges on the Seine, almost as separate characters.
Yeah, I had noted that one too. I'm looking forward to that latest edition of Eurocomics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you go to 182 next?
Yes.
You know, we were talking about Craig Yeo and how Reefer Madness is not part of Yeo books, but I think I may be even more excited about this book, which is a Yeo book.
Yes, right. Behaving Madly, Zany, Loco, Cockeyed, Ripoff Satire Magazines, which is basically a collection of knockoffs of Mad Magazine.
Right, exactly. And, you know, what was it, about 4 or 5 years ago, we had the Sincerest Form of Parody, which collected some of that stuff as well.
That's right. And there have been some collection, at least one other collection, that puts together, you know, the entire run of one of these parodies. And now I can't remember which one it is. Mm. I'm looking at my shelf and I can't see it. this includes stuff from Snafu, Lunatical, Cockeyed, Crazy, Thimk, Frenzy, Loco, Panic, and Zany.
Yeah. And it says it's going to be 200 pages, so there's going to be a lot packed into this.
Yeah, and it also looks like, you know, a lot of the people who worked on Mad either worked on these before they went to Mad or during their time at Mad.
Right.
You know, so you're going to get Jack Davis and Bill Elder, Al Jaffe, Basil Wolverton, a lot of people that you might expect from Mad, plus some guys you might not expect, like Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, Bill Everett, John Severin, Joe Kubert, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that I'm looking forward to. Now, we do plan to have Craig on the show for our very first episode in 2017. It's going to be part of our ongoing Happy New Yeo tradition, where an interview with Craig Yeo will be our first for the year. It'll be a great way of starting the year. This will not have been out by then,
mm-hmm.
but we can maybe ask him a little bit about it.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah. So that's great. And speaking of Yeo, he has another book coming out, and this is on page 187, and this is Haunted Love. This is something that he did earlier this year. You know, I think there were 3 issues where he brings together his work with Haunted Horror and Weird Love together to where you have spooky romance. And now we have all of those issues collected as part of the Chilling Archives of Horror comic series. And the next issue of Weird Love is also solicited on that page, 16.
Yes.
With a fun-looking cover.
Right.
And do you have anything else in IDW?
No, I go to Image.
Okay, then let's mosey on over there.
And there's a lot of new series at Image, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting right off the bat on page 190, is a book that I've been looking forward to since it was announced, Curse Words, written by Charles Sewell and drawn by Ryan Brown and Jordan Boyd. So it looks like, you know, Charles Sewell is going to write something that perfectly fits Ryan Brown's sensibility. A wizard has appeared in New York City and he's casting wonderful spells, getting famous, getting rich. It's great, but it's not. The wizard has everyone fooled. He's actually an evil wizard and evil things are on the way. And it's got a picture of the wizard riding a motorcycle on the cover with being chased by a dragon, which is a very Ryan Brown thing to put on a cover.
Yeah. You know, if you remember, I spoke with Ryan at HeroesCon several months ago, and he mentioned something about a project with Charles Sewell, but he couldn't say anything other than that. So this is what he was referring to. So I'm definitely looking forward to this.
Yeah. And, you know, at the image booth at CXC, they had like a convention copy of this, I guess. They had early convention issues for their newest series that were coming out. And so they had one for this. I didn't get it because they were asking $10 for it.
Jeez.
I figured I'll read it when it comes out. But it does look good.
What do you think about the new series that is solicited on the next page, 192, The Few?
Yeah. So this is by Sean Lewis and Hayden Sherman. I think the art we get 4-page preview. The art looks really good. These 4 pages are almost silent. There's just a few word balloons and caption boxes. So you're not necessarily getting a sense of what the story might be like from those preview pages. But the art looks good. Let's see. This is it says a limited maxi series,
but they don't say how limited it is.
Yeah. But it combines Mad Max with Station 11. Well, that's interesting. Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel is a novel I really like. So, and it's a dystopian future. 2 survivalist brothers stumble across an unlikely sight: a woman asleep in the woods, holding nothing but a gun, and a baby wearing a gas mask. And so
now you're suspicious their journey and tired of dystopian narratives.
I am, but you know, Station 11 is a post-apocalyptic narrative that I do really like. So, I might just check this out. And again, the art looks nice.
And if we turn the page, we get another number one issue of a new series, and this is God Country, written by Donnie Cates with art by Jeff Shaw, Jason Wordy, and John Hill.
Now this we've actually gotten a PDF of.
Right. Yeah. I was surprised that we had gotten, I guess, an unedited final issue or final first issue of that before I even saw the solicit. So.
Yeah. Did you read it yet?
I haven't read it. I looked through it. Did you read it?
Yeah. I read it. This actually might end up being a book that I wait for the trade on, because the real kind of concept of the book doesn't come into play until like the last 2 pages of the first issue. And so it's kind of a slow build. And I think that pacing might work really well for a trade that has, you know, 4 to 6 issues in it. I may be waiting for that rather than getting the series in individual issues.
But then we have on page 196 something that I was a little surprised to see, but I'm very happy to see.
Yeah. So Loose Ends, 4-issue Southern crime romance. Written by Jason Latour and drawn by Chris Brunner and Rico Renzi. I was surprised too, because this is a thing that sort of already exists.
Sort of,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So Latour and Brunner put this out. I think they self-published it.
I think so, yeah. And there were just, 3 issues?
Yeah, so they never finished it. So three of the four issues were self-published, and they were actually a larger size format. It doesn't look to me like this one's going to be in that larger format. But I'm glad to see this coming because, you know, that was a series I would see since Jason Latour is sort of local. He shows up at the many of the cons that I go to in this area, and I would often, you know, ask about loose ends. And it seemed like, you know, both his career and Chris Brunner's career had, you know, taken off so that they were not getting time to finish this. So I'm glad that we're going to see it.
Yeah. And Latour's fellow Charlottean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good to see local boy making good again, mm-hmm. or at least finishing up what he started in this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to get – I've got those three issues of Loose Ends. I'm going to probably get all four of these, and I'll be curious to compare not just the size but also to see what changes, if any, there may be in the interior.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's all I have in Image, so if you've got anything else.
No. That ends my – what I wanted to highlight in Image. And so if – we're finished there, then we go to the back half of the catalog after the premier publishers.
Right. And I way overshot where I wanted to go.
Okay.
Okay. So I was on 248.
Ah, with Abrams.
Yeah. No. Yes. No.
Oh. Okay. Well,
starting with Aardvark Vanaheim.
Okay.
Because we get the first issue of Cerebus in Hell.
Oh, that's right.
There had been a zero issue a few months ago, but this is, you know, the return of Cerebus in a monthly comic.
You know, this is weird. I completely overlooked that, and I think because when I turned to page 248, there were two things that I noticed. You know, the next issue of Terry Moore's Motor Girl, and then toward the bottom of the page, you know, what, you know, I was going to highlight is from Abrams, Octavia Butler's Kindred,
mm-hmm.
the adaptation of that. But and then because of that, I just did not look above it to see Cerebus in Hell, and I feel ashamed.
Well, it's. You know, it's big of you to confess that. We could have gone right past that, and you could have just said, oh, I saw that, yeah. okay, but yeah, I mean, I think that the Abrams comic arts, the adaptation of Octavia Butler's Kindred, does look interesting.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about Cerebus in Hell, this is an event.
Yeah, yeah.
So now when is that Zero issue going to come out?
I don't know if it hasn't already come out. I'm not sure. I didn't order it, so.
Okay, see, I did, and just this weekend I got my latest DCB service package. It wasn't in there, but I was at my local shop yesterday, the 29th, for Halloween Comic Fest, and I was looking on the wall. I would have noticed that.
Okay.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
So if it is out, then it's nowhere that I'm looking.
Yeah.
But anyway, on page 248, both Cerebus in Hell number one and Octavia Butler's Kindred.
Yeah, which is adapted by Damian Duffy and John Jennings, mm-hmm. Both of whom I got to see and talk to at CXC this year.
Oh.
And so I was glad to see both of them.
Did they have any information about this book?
I didn't actually ask them about it. Okay. So.
I mean, did they have anything? Oh, but did they have a table, or did you just run into them?
Yeah, they had a table with what is that? Now I'm drawing a blank on what the name of the publisher is. Is it Microcosm or something that's doing? No, it's not Microcosm. That's doing the all like African American created comic series. Anyway, we may come across it later in the previews, but anyway, they were set up at those booths. And of course, you know, John Jennings does some great academic presentations as well. And he was presenting at the academic portion of the conference, and Damian was there for that as well.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
So where do you go next?
Aftershock 256.
Oh, yeah. It's been two or more months since we had a new number one, the starting of a new series with Aftershock. But we have two in this issue. On page 256, there is Blood Blister number one.
Mm-hmm. This is written by Phil Hester, who's already working for Aftershock as the artist on Shipwrecked with Warren Ellis. Mm-hmm. And then drawn by Tony Harris, who we haven't seen do a regular comic in a while.
Right, yeah.
And Phil Hester recently has announced that he had some health problems that were kind of derailing his career. So I'm glad to see him both writing and drawing again.
Okay. There's that. So, yeah, this looks interesting. Sin is a joke to Brandon Hull. Morality a crush for the weak. Laws were tools to be abused. But when the corruption he scoffed at begins to manifest on his once perfect body, Hull finds himself cast into the hidden world of unspeakable horror from which there is no escape. How can you be saved when the evil possessing you is your own soul? And then the cover that we have, Harris's art, looks really nice.
Yep.
Kind of a half and half thing going.
Yeah.
Like an evil Janus.
Or Two-Face.
No, or Two-Face. I was being more mythical.
Yeah.
But on the facing page is, and I guess in a way it's a number one for a new series, but it plays off of an already ongoing series, and this is Animosity. So this is Animosity The Rise, number one.
Uh-huh. And this is a one-shot.
Okay.
But with art by Juan Doe. I don't think Juan Doe draws the regular series, does he?
Can't recall.
No, he draws American Monster. Mm. That's one. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense now looking at that. Okay, so where do you go after Aftershock?
I jump way ahead to 288, so if you have anything.
No, nope, that's where I go then. Next as well.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, is this what, are you going to highlight Big Planet Retrofit?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is something where we were ahead of the curve and mm-hmm. discussed this title already. Eleanor Davis's Libby's Dad. It's interesting in that I was talking with Jared at Big Planet about this, and for some reason, previews or Diamond seems to put in Big Planet Retrofit titles later than when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was last month or the month before we saw Luke Howard's Our Mother, but Our Mother had been out by at least, I think, 4 weeks before that. And so we have something similar going on here with Libby's Dad. But, you know, whether you read these books or find out about them upon the time of release or after, it doesn't matter. They're good things, right? We keep singing the praises of Big Planet and Retrofit Comics, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're curious about this title and you didn't the first time around, then definitely go back into our archives and listen to what Andy and I have to say about Libby's Dad.
Yeah, it's good. It's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. And where do I go next? I skip ahead quite a number of pages. Do you have anything before Dynamite?
Yeah, I go to 294 in Boom to a first issue of a miniseries called Lady Castle, written by Delilah Dawson and drawn by Ashley Woods. Mm-hmm. I'm highlighting this because Ashley Woods is a kind of up-and-coming, I guess, or already-coming artist who's gotten a lot of attention lately, and her work's really nice. And so I'm curious to see this. As the solicit says, when King Mancastle and his mighty vassals ride off on a crusade, the women left behind are not at all put out. That's a lot less armor polishing for them to do. Of course, when the men get themselves eaten by a dragon and leave a curse that attracts monsters to the castle, well, the women take umbrage with that. And so now one of the princesses, now the blacksmith's wife Marinor is king, Princess Eve is the captain, and the only remaining and least capable knight, Sir Riddick, is tasked with teaching the ladies of the castle how to fight, defend, build, and do all manner of noisy things the men had been doing while the women assumed they were just drunk. So that's like a cute, interesting twist on, on the medieval knight's story. Mm-hmm. So, I'm guessing it's likely going to be, though it isn't part of the Boom's All Ages stuff, Boombox. I think it might, unless it gets really graphically violent, it might be a nice all ages book as well.
Yeah, and I think you pointed out that this is the first of four issues. I wondered about this. The art definitely looks good, and that caught my attention. But the subject matter is really not where I have much interest. Sword and sorcery, that kind of fantasy, or heroic romances of that sort. Although, I did really like Rat Queens. So, but there was a lot of cussing in Rat Queens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right about the art.
So then I go to Dynamite.
Okay, where in Dynamite do you go?
328, so okay. If you have anything earlier than that.
No, that's where I was looking as well.
Okay, so Dynamite has the James Bond license, and so we've seen now two so far James Bond series, the one written by Warren Ellis that has had two story arcs, and then Hammerhead, which is started more recently by Andy Diggle and Luca Casalinguida, and now an interesting spin-off, James Bond Felix Leiter number one, written by James Robinson and drawn by Aaron Campbell. I've always had a soft spot for Felix Leiter, both in the movies. He's Bond's basically CIA liaison. And in the more recent movies, he's been played by Jeffrey Wright and as a pretty cool character. In the books, though, Leiter runs into a problem in the novels in Live and Let Die. He gets eaten by, I think, barracudas. So he loses an arm and a leg. And so in the remainder of the books, he shows up in many of them to assist Bond, but he's got a hook on one hand and a wooden leg. So this looks like it's following in that. He does have a prosthetic arm we see on the cover. But now he's a private investigator, which I do think also is a thing that that happens in the books as well.
Right. His prosthetic hand, it's his right hand, looks almost like a lizard paw.
Yeah, but it also interestingly looks like the prosthetics that were created by the villain in Warren Ellis's first arc.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if there's some connection to that. This looks like it's based on the novel's version, because also he has blonde hair, and other than Jeffrey Wright being African American, all of the other Felix Leiters in the movies have had either black hair or gray hair, including Jack Lord, David Hedison. I don't know if I can go through. It would be great if I could name every Felix Leiter in the James Bond movies.
Well, you are a James Bond aficionado.
I'm sure there's people that can finish that list better than I can. But yeah.
So another James Bond title, and if we turn the page to 330, we have another Spirit series, and this is the first issue of which, The Spirit, The Corpse Makers, issue number one of five, and this is not only drawn by Franco Francavilla, or Francesco Francavilla, but also written by him.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that too, because Francavilla has a nice pulp sensibility that is seen in The Black Beetle, a book that he both wrote and drew.
Right. And his art is perfect for the noir feel.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the spirit. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And it was just recently that we got that first collection from Dynamite, the new spirit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of collections, on page 331, we have the collected A Train Called Love, and this is written by Garth Ennis with art by Mark Dos Santos. Now, I know that you and I pointed out A Train Called Love when issue number one first came out, but have you read any of the series?
No, and it's, what, 10 issues?
I can't remember how. Is it 10 issues?
Yeah, that's what it says in this.
I had intended to read this, but I never got around to picking up issue one. So, I mean, I have it, but I never got around to physically picking it up and reading it, which is unfortunate.
Yep.
I have one other thing in Dynamite. I don't know if you...
I don't, so go ahead.
Okay, and this is on page 333, Masters of Spanish Comic Book Art, and this is a hardcover. It's 272 pages for $39.99, so that strikes me as a pretty good deal. Now, one of the reasons why I'm pointing this out is, well, first, the art samples that we have on page 333 look really nice. But also, I think it'd be great to look at this beside what Fantagraphics has been doing lately in publishing more comics from Spanish creators. What about 2 months ago, we had that Spanish Fever collection, which was really good. And so, there seems to be more over the past year and a half, more publications in English of Spanish creators.
Yeah, this one, you know, it's got Vampirella on the cover and some of the other kind of horror inflected images we get. The solicit mentions the Warren series, Vampirella, Creepy, and Eerie, which showcased a lot of these Spanish artists. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering how much it's going to go beyond those publications.
I don't know. You'd have to get the book and find out.
Yeah. And then I'm done. I don't have anything else in Dynamite.
I go next to Drawn in Quarterly on 347. Do you have anything before that?
Yeah, I just want to make a stop at 346 real quick.
Okay.
At Devil's Due First Comics. Because one of the things we've mentioned since Devil's Due is has, you know, taken over, I guess, the First Comics imprint, is I've been wondering what stuff from First Comics are they gonna be doing, you know, how are they going to brand themselves as First Comics? And we've seen some things like the E-Man collection that is offered again in this issue. But another one is the Black Flame is getting, sort of collected. It's going to be a 7-issue miniseries. But this was also a series of backup stories that appeared in First Comics, I think in Grimjack. I'm not remembering absolutely correctly. I didn't look it up beforehand because it doesn't say in here what the original publication was. But there were 21 chapters originally, and this is going to have first put them all together in 7 issues, and then I guess in a collection later on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to see some of that first the more obscure First Comic stuff getting republished. And then right next to it is a graphic novel called Light Runner by Lamar Waldron and Rod Wiggum from Dover Publications. This is not something I remember, but because Dover does a lot of this recovery work on older graphic novels, I get the sense that this is something from an earlier time as well.
It looks it.
Okay, then I go to Drawn and Quarterly.
Yeah, yeah, page 347. And there's only one brand new book solicited in the Drawn and Quarterly section this month, and this is from Joe Ullman, The Abominable Mr. Seabrook. And I'm looking forward to this. I even got in touch with Joe and asked him when this comes out at the beginning of next year if he would want to be on the Comics Alternative for an interview, and he said sure. Which is interesting because I interviewed him, it was a year ago that the interview went up on our blog. And mm-hmm. at the time when I was interviewing him via email, we were going back and forth for at least a couple of months. He had said that he preferred this to the voice recorded interview. But then the other day he said, yeah, he'd be glad to be on the show. So that's cool. Because I want to talk with him about this. He talked a little bit about this book when I was interviewing him about a year ago. And so it's good to see that this is coming to fruition. And he would post work from this on Instagram every now and again that I would see. So we have the new book coming out in January, and it is based on the life of William Buller Seabrook. In the way it's described here, it says that Seabrook was willing to go deeper than any outsider had before. He was a journalist and travel writer, participating in voodoo ceremonies, riding camels across the Sahara Desert, communing with cannibals, and most notably popularizing the term zombie in the West. A string of his best-selling books show an engaged, sympathetic gentleman hoping to share these strange hidden delights with the rest of the world. But, of course, there was a dark side. Seabrook was a barely functioning alcoholic who was deeply obsessed with bondage and the so-called mystical properties of pain and degradation. What led the popular and vivid writer to such a sad state? And I guess Joe is going to provide the answer to that.
Yeah, yeah, that looks interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, again, something great from Drawn and Quarterly. Mm-hmm. And then there's Fantagraphics, which we can always expect great things from as well.
Yes. And the first thing in Fantagraphics is something that surprised me.
Me too.
Psychodrama Illustrated number 1 by Gilbert Hernandez. This is, as it says, a Love and Rockets spinoff featuring Fritz and her extended family in a series of stories that bend Fritz's reality. Like, isn't Fritz's reality, like, isn't the constant state of Fritz's reality to be bent already? So the only thing I could think of that bends Fritz's reality, if it's bent into, like, a normal that situation, like, can it be bent any further? Anyway, in this issue, Fritz bumps into an old acquaintance of her sister Luba's. The fellow sees great similarities in his sister, and the chemistry between he and Fritz does what it does. And I'm guessing that Gilbert does what he does with that relationship.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had the same reaction when I read this solicit. Well, first off, when I saw the solicit, I was really surprised. I hadn't heard of this, and so I found it curious. But then the way they describe it in the solicit, I'm wondering, you know, how weirder can it get? And how much more contorted can the life of Fritz be? Especially as we've commented on past episodes, when there are so many Fritz imitators, it's hard to tell the real Fritz.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it seems like, I mean, we're going to probably talk about this later, the most recent, iteration of Love and Rockets, the new comic Love and Rockets Volume 4, number 1, seems to be addressing just how confusing that Fritz and the Fritz and Killer and so on narrative is.
Mm-hmm. But it's good. And another thing that I'm wondering about is how similar this might be to some of those titles that he was doing, and also that Jaime was doing with his characters after the first volume of Love and Rockets ended.
Right.
Because, you know, they had a series of titles that were separate but carried on the lives and the dramas of various characters. And especially with Gilbert, we had Luba stories, and there were True Love, or what was the title of that one that I'm blanking on now? Gilbert had at least three different titles where he was dealing with Luba and her family, and it gets a little confusing. But you know, confusing's relative now, especially within the context of Fritz and her life going on here. But I'm wondering if this will be somewhat similar to that, and maybe if we could expect other titles in addition to Psychodrama Illustrated to spin out of Love and Rockets, because there's no stopping Gilbert.
Right. Well, what I'm guessing is that may be happening here, and this is just speculation, that, you know, Gilbert's productivity outpaces Jaime so much that he needs to get some of the stuff out that would normally have been, you know, in the annual volume that they were doing. And so I'm guessing that this is going to kind of intersect and overlap with whatever Gilbert does in Love and Rockets as well.
Yeah.
But we'll see anyway.
But then underneath that, we have yet another Spanish artist, Joan Cornella, and his book, which is not new, but I guess this is a new edition from Fantagraphics, Zonzo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you familiar with Cornella's work?
No.
Okay. He came out last year with Mox Nox, which is a wild book. I don't want to call them strip comics, although there's something strip-like to them in that you have individual stories many times that are four panels. It's kind of like the example that we get on page 354, right, where this guy is really pale and he's at the beach and he is being pointed at by two tanned women who are, you know, attractive and in bikinis. And so what he does is he douses himself in, looks like gasoline, sets himself on fire, definitely gets some kind of a tan. And so one of those bikinied women runs after him. And in the fourth panel, they end up getting married. Little things like that. Really strange, weird, offbeat comics. And that's Cornella's style. And when I saw him at SPX last year, I had him sign my copy of Mox Nox. But I also got a copy of his Zonzo. And I don't know if it was self-published or just from a very obscure, small English language publisher. I can't remember. So I've read that. And it's fun.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely wanting to check it out just because that sample strip is pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing that's notable about Cornella, are you a Wilco fan?
Yes.
He did the cover of Wilco's latest CD.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Check it out. And then what do you know of the book that's solicited underneath, or at least the author, Charles Globitz? And this book is called Starseeds.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this, and it says it's his first graphic novel.
Yeah, and one of the things that got my attention is in the solicit, they write, Starseeds fits in perfectly with artists such as Matthew Barney, Trenton Doyle, Hancock, Gary Panter, Marcel Zuma, and Ernesto Cavano. In other words, work that is epic, mythological, fantastical, enigmatic, and visually arresting. And, you know, Panter is the one that I know of that lineup there, which that got my attention.
Yeah, and I know Matthew Barney as, you know, a visual artist, but and his stuff is strange.
Yeah. And the sample that we get, a little bit of it, looks strange. So
yes. I'm wondering if it, I mean, the sample also doesn't have any dialogue. I wonder if it is going to be a silent graphic novel. It doesn't say, but it feels like Fantagraphics is loaded with some good stuff this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the next page, 355, there is Gerald Gablonski's Farmer Ned's Comics Barn.
Yes.
And I don't know Jablonski's work. Do you?
No.
Or I mean, it's pronounced Jablonski because they've spelled it two ways in the solicit. It's Jablonski. And then I guess at the top of the solicit is Jablonski.
Yeah. If I look closely at the cover, it looks like it's Jablonski.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
So I think the extra O is
just a typo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks weird.
Yep.
They describe it, Jablonski belongs in the ingeniously baffling auteur pantheon with John Cage, James Joyce, and Andy Warhol. Yes, you read that right.
I have the sense that they're just throwing names in here at this point. But it's good that they're, you know, so many of the solicits we see that say try to compare something to something else focus mainly on either, you know, comics to comics or comics maybe to movies. But these are giving us other types of artists and writers. So anyway.
And then another, I guess, new artist for me is Anna Hafish, and this is her book, The Artist. Mm-hmm. Had you heard of her before?
No.
Mm-mm. It looks interesting. It says, Anna Hafish's idiosyncratic graphic novel chronicles the experiences of a young artist, satirizing the exclusive and frequently absurd world of fine art.
Huh. So that might be a nice companion to You Might Be an Artist If.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the other things in Fantagraphics are worthy of note. The Not Waving But Drawing collection by John Cuneo. His work has appeared in Esquire and The New Yorker, but this is more of his less known, it says, is the over-the-top and hilariously perverse cartoons that fill the pages of Not Waving But Drawing. This might be – I get the feeling this John Cuneo book is going to be a lot like that Ivan Brunetti book. What was it called? It was just two letters. So High, something like that. Anyway, is a book that, you know, like my wife Jennifer loves Ivan Brunetti's New Yorker covers. But when she saw that book, she said, you know, you got to keep this book hidden.
Oh, that's that smaller format book, right?
Yeah. But that, you know, a artist who's probably known to more popular audience for New Yorker covers also did a book that is really kind of, I don't know, perverse humor. So this might be that, you know. I worry that somebody's like, oh, I know his New Yorker covers, and they'll pick this book up off my coffee table and they'll never want to talk to me again.
Well, if you don't want people over, then that's quite effective.
Yeah. Okay, so that's mainly what I had to do in Fantagraphics. Yeah. And then I don't have anything in the catalog for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's one more thing in Fantagraphics worth mentioning, and this has me scratching my head, because this is Red Red Rock by Hayashi Seiichi, and if that title sounds familiar, it's because Shay and I discussed it earlier this year on our monthly manga series. And Red Red Rock came out, I think, the very beginning or close to the beginning of this year from Breakdown Press, which is a UK publisher. And last I checked, which was just the other day, on Amazon, this is still in print that you can get from Breakdown Press. Hmm. So I'm wondering why this is solicited in Fantagraphics. Now, if Fantagraphics is going to come out with a new edition of this book, then okay, but I didn't see that on Amazon. Maybe I didn't look deep enough. But I know that Breakdown Press books aren't the easiest things to get sometimes here in the U.S. But I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. But however you get your Seiichi, then it would be worth it.
Yep.
Okay, you said you go where next?
I go to 275, so if you or 375, so if you have anything before then.
Yeah, on 372 under Kodansha Comics, there is a new deluxe edition of Masamune's The Ghost in the Shell. So this is good. I think it's still in print, or at least I thought it was, but now apparently we're getting a nice hardcover deluxe edition.
Yep.
So, and that is a manga classic.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And so then we turn the page and there's 375.
Okay. What I wanted to mention on 375 is Microcosm Publishing, 6 Days in Cincinnati by Dan Mendez Moore. This is a, as it says, a graphic history of the 2001 Cincinnati riots, told for the first time from the perspective of the participants. And that this also discusses how this, set up for the Black Lives Matter protests in Ferguson and so on. And so I'm curious to see how that that book turns out. It sounds very interesting, and I think it's also in keeping with a lot of traditions in comics journalism of telling the stories from the perspectives of those participating in them. I know, even going back to Spain Rodriguez doing his comics on the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention protests.
I have to check that out. I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I overlooked it. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we turn the page, 376 under NBM, we have The Lighthouse by Paco Roca, another Spanish creator. Fantagraphics came out earlier this year with Roca's Wrinkles. And so now we get another Roca book through NBM. And I really liked Wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
He also had something in Spanish Fever as well, that collection.
Oh, good. Yeah, I had that noted too because I thought that looked interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe if there's a theme in this month's previews, it's Spanish comics.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, they're highlighting comic strip collections in this issue, and we actually haven't really talked about any of those. But yeah, I think you're picking out something that might be a trend we're going to be seeing in the next year is these English translations of Spanish comics.
On 378, we get to the Oni section, and are you wanting to highlight what I'm about to highlight?
Yes.
Yeah, The Damned, Volume 1. This is by Cullen Bunn with art by Brian Hurt. And I guess this is leading the way into a new Damned series. But what's being collected here in this trade, Volume 1, is The Damned that came out in the early... God, what was it? 2006, 2007, something like that.
Yeah, it's the series. It was a short mini series, I think 3 issues, and there may have been a follow up. That so this would probably have the 2 mini series that Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt did before they did The Sixth Gun,
right?
And so they're returning to this, and this, you know, is The Sixth Gun dealt with the supernatural and westerns. This mashes up supernatural and gangster,
right?
Genres. It's $10 for 152 pages for the first time in color. And so that is if people haven't read The Damned, or if they were, you know, they got in on The Sixth Gun but didn't see this earlier work by these creators, this is definitely worth checking out. It is a great series.
Yeah. So you read the original?
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I did, and this is the weird thing. I had forgotten that I read it, or I just forgotten about it. And then I saw this, and I was reminded, huh, I did read that.
Yeah, you know, I just remember seeing Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt at Heroes Con soon after this had come out. And I talked to them about it a little bit because the Damned had kind of, had reminded me of the Coen Brothers movie Miller's Crossing. And so we talked about that tradition in gangster stories of, one person kind of pitting the two sides of a gangster war against each other, of a gang war against each other. And, you know, that goes back to Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest, for example. Yeah. And so they kind of take that genre convention and turn it into put a supernatural twist on it.
So do you have anything else in Oni?
No.
Okay. I go next to page 385.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is this, did you note the same thing, pocketbooks?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Secret Path. And it says Secret Path is a 10-song album by Gord Downie with a graphic novel by illustrator Jeff Lemire that tells the story of Chani, or Charlie, Wenjack, a 12-year-old boy who died in flight from the Cecilia Jeffrey Indian Residential School 50 years ago.
Hmm. So this sounds like it's based on a true story.
Yeah. So it's I guess Downie, and I'm not familiar with Downie and his music. Are you?
No.
Mm. So apparently, I guess the music is based on this true story, and then Lemire's text is as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
That seems like a neat, an interesting combination. So see how that goes.
Huh. Now, is this going to be in CD form? Or DVD form? Is the text itself digital, or is there a print component, I would assume?
Yeah, it looks like it says 96 pages, so yeah, I'm assuming it's going to have the CD in with the graphic novel.
Hmm. Well, and the thing that's curious about the CD is how many people get CDs now?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just organized my CDs. Put them in alphabetical order. That took me all day today. So as I was going through those, I was thinking, who buys CDs anymore? Myself. So
well,
why do I have these artifacts lying around?
Well, apparently you can get a new artifact with Jeff Lemire doing the next.
Yeah. And I go right below that really quick to PS Art Books, because last time we talked about how PS Art Books was putting together volumes that included several short series.
Yeah.
That, and then this, they're continuing that this month with Lars of Mars, or Lars of Mars. Lars of Mars, Crusaders from Mars, and Eerie Adventure. So Lars lasted two issues, Crusader from Mars also lasted two issues, and then Eerie Adventures was one issue. And it includes writing by Jerry Siegel and art by Murphy Anderson.
Now, right underneath that is the Lars of Mars and Crusaders from Mars slipcase.
Yep.
Now, so it doesn't have Eerie Adventures?
No, it does. Left it out of the title in the solicit. It's right. Listed there. So basically for an extra $10, you get a slipcase.
No. Okay. And I go next to Titan. I don't have anything before that.
No, I go to 396.
Yes. And on 396, we have the next in their Hard Case Crime comic series. And this is also by Walter Hill and Matz, the writers, because, you know, they're doing Trigger Man. And then the art on this is by Jeff. And this title is Reassignment. It's R-E is in brackets, and then Assignment, issue number mm-hmm. one.
Now, is Jeff also doing the art?
Oh, I can't remember if
he's doing
the art to Trigger Man.
Trigger Man, I think he is.
Is he?
Yes, it is. Yes. It says the crime noir thriller from the team of critically acclaimed hard case crime series Trigger Man.
Oh, yeah. I see on page 4 or 5. Yeah.
Right. And so Reassignment is also coming out as a movie with Sigourney Weaver and Michelle Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting. So this will be basically the adaptation of that. Now, I know Hard Case Crime has done some prose novel adaptations of crime films. Most recently, Charles Arday, who's the publisher of Hard Case Crime, did the Nice Guys. So now they're doing a comic book version, but again, with a team that's already been involved in Hard Case Crime comics. Now, this is 48 pages for $5.99. I'm wondering if this is going to be a one shot, or if it is, or if it's going to be a a mini series. It also says published for the first time in English.
Yeah. Okay, so this is weird because you're reading information from the solicit that says $5.99, but the image of the cover marks the book at $3.99. And of course, you can't tell the page count from that image. So I wonder if it's going to be $3.99 or $4.99. It is a chunky issue at 48 pages. And I would guess that this is not just a one-shot, that this is going to be something that is going to be several issues at the least.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if Edward Govan translates this one as well, because he did the translation on Trigger Man.
Right.
But, and I was asking him about that the other day, or I guess the other week after I first read Trigger Man, and he said it had been so long since he had translated Trigger Man, so he said he had forgotten when it was coming out, and I told him that first issue had just come out, and so I'm curious to know if he did the translation for reassignment as well.
Yeah, I like both of the first issues of the Hard Case Crime books.
Peepland and Trigger Man.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'll keep getting these.
Right. And we, I guess, can tease to our listeners that next week and then the following week, you and I are going to be looking at recent crime comics. And of the many titles that have come out recently, Peepland and Trigger Man are two that we're definitely going to discuss.
Yep. Yep.
So something to look forward to. And then I only have one other book that I wanted to point out in the comic section.
I'm done, so go ahead.
Okay. The one that I'm going to highlight is on page 432. It's in the vertical comic section, and this is Junji Ito's Dissolving Classroom. Apparently, this is a new collection of horror tales.
Great.
And in fact, on the manga episode for this month that just went up on Friday, what Shay and I did, we decided to look at horror manga, and we looked at six different horror manga titles, not necessarily new stuff, some new stuff and some older stuff. But one of the things that we looked at was Junji Ito's Fragments of Horror, which came out 2 years ago. And at that time, it was his first collection, or it was his first horror writing, period, in 8 years. So this is a new collection. It's good to see that he's doing more horror, because he is creepy as hell.
Yes, I agree. And I kind of overlooked that one, so because that's not – Vertical doesn't normally publish his stuff, do they?
No, it's Viz.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, and then this is new stories too, so I'll be curious to see that.
Right. Now, I think last month was when they solicited the deluxe edition of Tomy, which is going to be coming out from Viz. But that's an older property.
Right.
This, something much newer.
Yep.
And I'll be curious to see what those tales are, because when Shay and I were discussing Fragments of Horror, one of the things we discussed was, you know, the question of Ito playing into the grotesqueness of his style, maybe to a point that it loses its effectiveness. And in some of the stories in Fragments of Horror, I think both of us thought that was the case. So I'm really interested to read this new collection to see if I feel the same way. So that's all in the comic section.
Okay.
And there is at least one thing in the book section that I wanted to point out.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, two. One is on page 452, and this is The British Invasion, Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison, and the Invention of the Modern Comic Writer. And I think this came out not too long ago. And Sequart is the publisher of this. And they've done a number of things on Grant Morrison in the past, so I guess it kind of makes sense. But what's even more exciting is on the next page, 453, Chris Ware Conversations.
Yeah. And this is edited by Gene Braithwaite for Mississippi, University of Mississippi Press, right?
Right, yeah, part of their Conversation with Comics Artists series.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's good to see the collection with Chris Ware coming out, but this is one of those creators that you would have thought that there would have already been a collection of interviews.
Right.
And I wonder how many interviews this collects, because it doesn't strike me as someone who gives many.
No, it says 1993 to 2015 is what it covers, including a new, as these collections usually do, contain a new interview.
Right. Yeah. And that's it for me in the November previews catalog.
Yep, me too.
Wow. So there was a lot here. I don't think backbreakingly a lot, but nonetheless enough to make us watch our checkbook.
Yep.
So good stuff. And as Andy and I pointed out at the top of the show, you can find probably the vast, vast majority, if not all the titles that we highlighted, at significant discounts at the website of our sponsor, which is Discount Comic Book Service. Go to dcbservice.com and you'll find great deals. Now, as we're recording this, they do not have the November specials up yet, but I'm sure that they will in a few days. So definitely check out dcbservice.com. And after you do pre-order your comics there, get in touch with us and let us know if Andy and I are on the mark with some of our solicits from the November catalog. If you go to the website comicsalternative.com, you'll find that you can leave us a voice message via SpeakPipe, or you can call us over the phone. Our phone number is 415-3-COMICS. That's 415-326-6427.
That's right, or you can get a hold of us by email. We are twoguys@comicsalternative.com, or you can get a hold of us individually. I'm Andy@comicsalternative.com.
And I'm Derek@comicsalternative.com.
And you can also check out our Twitter feed, which is @2guys with PhDs.
That's right. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, Google+, Goodreads, Pinterest, and YouTube. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. You can stream us on Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn, on Spotify, and on iHeartRadio. And if you're an Android user, on Google Play Music. But you can find every single one of our podcast episodes, as well as the reviews and comics-related commentary that we post on our blog, simply by going to our website, comicsalternative.com.
That's right. All the ways to get a hold of us and let us know how we're doing.
That's right. And we do like to hear from you. And remember, as we pointed out, next week is the first of our two-part crime comic series.
Yeah, so check that out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing those titles.
Yep.
And until then, I'm Derek.
And I'm Andy. See ya.